Well, if you think about it, Caleb, like, who are the best bond managers on the planet? Life insurance companies.
Yeah. If you are not in the 0% tax bracket, there's a lot of unknowns.
This is the stock portion, as it says there, and this is the bond portion, right? So all we're taking away is that investment in bonds. I'm replacing that with life insurance.
We had 761,000 in bonds, only producing 16,000. The life insurance is actually earning more than the bonds.
Or what else does the life insurance allow us to do?
Isn't it considered tax-exempt cash flow?
Exactly. Bonds go up and down with market volatility.
Yeah. I think it's a fallacy to say that bonds are not correlated to the market.
The beauty of life insurance isn't just about the cash flow, right, that you can take out of the policies. What is it at the end of the day? Death benefit.
Yeah, I just want to say, number one, don't sue us. I say that sincerely. Like, we're just trying to give education. We want people to think differently. This is not financial advice. Hey guys, it's Caleb Williams.
First off, debt is a function of your past.
Hey guys, welcome back to another very exciting in the studio episode of the Better Wealth Show. I'm here with my good friend Justin Hawley, and we're going to be talking about whole life insurance as a bond alternative. We're not just going to be having a conversation though. Justin's got receipts. He's got the numbers, and he's a specialist. I'm going to have him tell you a little bit about his specialty in a second. But what I love so much about Justin is he gets passionate about this helping people, and you really love numbers. And so we are in Nashville, Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. A pleasure to be here.
Welcome to the Better Wealth Studios.
We're working on
some fun and exciting projects, so stay tuned. But while you were in Nashville, I was like, you know what? You were talking to me about like what you do with some of your clients. You show them option A versus option B. You show them real numbers with bond alternatives. And I'm like, can you like do this? Can we do an episode? Because I'm sure our YouTube audience would eat this up. And whenever we actually show numbers, like you would think like people like tune that out. We have an audience that appreciates that. So with before we get into the numbers, why don't you give a little bit of your backstory, who you are?
Yeah.
You're a nerd. Okay. You own that really well. And also give a little bit of your background. Like, you're not just some random person off the street. Like, you know your stuff. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing some collaborations for the future. Stay tuned. And if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, please subscribe, because there's going to be a lot more good content to come.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been a financial advisor for a little over a decade. I'm a RICP, so Retirement Income Certified Professional, Wealth Management Certified Professional. I have my securities license, but today there's no investment advice being given on this lecture here. But so our goal today, if you will, is this is what we show our clients, right? And so oftentimes people, you know, they hear that life insurance can produce income, or life insurance can open up other avenues for them when it comes to distribution planning. But kind of like it's smoke and mirrors. How does this work, right?
Yeah.
So what we like to do is we like to tell people, hey, you're starting your savings plan. You're at this path in the road where you can take the left path or the right path. And it isn't a per se right path. Like, it's their choice, right? Our goal, right, as fiduciaries and people who want to share as much information as possible, is to allow people to make the decision themselves.
Yep.
Look at the data, right? So the tool I'm going to share today, I could build it 7 ways to Sunday, right? We could do a lot of different scenarios. But what I want to do with you, Caleb, is I'm going to have you give me the numbers so people know that I didn't prefabricate this, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to build out a savings plan, right? I kind of already have the numbers chosen, but it doesn't matter. Like, you know, we're using Roth IRA maximum contribution numbers, for instance, right? But we're going to have you choose the rate of returns and the tax rates.
I love it. And and just to set the stage, reason why this is important, because a lot of people really appreciate in our audience, like, life insurance can be a place that you can store, protect, grow your money when set up and used properly. Like, it's multidimensional. It's a multi-use tool. And so a lot of people are into it and they don't care about retirement. They're like, hey, I want to use it for the next 30 years while I'm able to, you know, save and invest for the future. Okay.
Right.
Not investment advice, but that's one of the reasons they want to do that. And what you're saying is, hey, there are some people that appreciate life insurance for the distribution phase. We've had people. I've had Tom Wall, who's a PhD and is super impressive. And I just had another person, like, I've had multiple people talk about life insurance and retirement. And I think sometimes it doesn't register and sometimes it does. But that's what you're saying. And so what I want to say as we're diving in is, if you appreciate life insurance as an and while you're working, think of this as just a cherry on top, or think about this as another option or another thing that enhances what you're currently doing. It's not an either or, it's
right.
an and.
Right. Well, if you think about it, Caleb, like, who are the best bond managers on the planet? Life insurance companies,
yeah,
right?
It's a really good point.
Right. So rather than buying bonds ourselves, wouldn't we want to turn to the experts, right? And yep. by the way, that doesn't mean, you know, we're not anti-bond in our firm. We're not telling anybody not to invest in bonds or bonds funds.
Yeah.
We're just going to share a little bit of data about bond returns and, cool. and what that looks like, right? So what we hope to do today is we're going to build out two different scenarios,
okay.
right? So we're going to jump in here, right?
Okay.
So we're going to share our screen here. All right. So we have a couple here. They're 40 years old.
Okay.
All right. And they're going to start saving. They just met with Caleb.
Okay.
Right? They're
not
gonna,
investment advice, yeah, though, not, right?
No, this is just a savings plan, right? We're not telling them what investments to choose, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And nor are we giving them tax advice. But that said, I'm going to put you on the spot and
okay.
ask you to choose a income tax bracket for them.
How much money do they make?
Let's say that this couple's making around $300,000.
Okay, so let's say 25%.
25%? All right. Let's just put 25 there. Right? And how about their distribution phase? Now, you know the myth that, oh, everybody's going to be in a lower tax environment in retirement, right? But is that true, right?
It depends, but with inflation, with thresholds, with how our government's spending money, what do you usually do? I would say keep it the same.
Keep it the same.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't necessarily think we should raise it.
All right. How do you feel about capital gains tax?
I have no opinion.
Right. These folks are probably floating in around about 20%, right?
Sure. Yes.
20, maybe 15. We'll leave it at 15.
We'll leave
All
it
right.
at 15.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. So what we're going to do is, again, like I said, we're at a fork in the road.
Okay.
Right? We can take the left path. We can take the right path.
Yep.
It's not a right path, but, you know, it is what it is, right? So what we're going to build out is a typical financial plan. So if you walk into most financial services offices around the country,
yep.
what do they want to talk to you about first?
Your assets.
And
rate
and how
return.
They maybe can build you a better portfolio yep. than the other yep. guy down the
it's
road.
It's all the name of the game is I can get a better rate of return than this. I can do better than this. And that's what almost everyone's competing is if I can get you a better rate of return, you're going to work with me versus the other person.
Right, right. Yep. And so with that, we're just going to plug in some rates of return
Perfect.
To these people's like financial plan, if you will. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So everybody knows that we need to invest in a 401k, right? That's not us
yeah.
telling you that you need to, but that's common conventional wisdom,
yeah.
invest in your 401k. So what do you feel that they should hope for? If let's say they're an average 60-40 investor.
Yeah, I would say, I think 8% would be a good number to go with, giving them the benefit of the doubt. I think some people could potentially earn more. I think over time, 8% could be generous.
Got it.
I feel like I'm being generous when I'm giving them 8%.
And their expense ratio probably around 0.2.
Yeah, maybe half a percent.
Half. Okay, perfect. So we'll just add that in there. Awesome. All right. So we got that one done. We're going to come back and do all these now.
Wow,
so,
okay, let's say everything's 8%.
Everything's 8. All right. Perfect. So we're just going to build these out to be 8 here in real time. How about
what do you think? What do you think? Because if this is a Roth, it's probably going to be like 0.9.
Right. Yeah. Somewhere around there. We would try to make sure that our clients get charged less than 1%. Right. So let's just change these to 8 real quick here. Now, how did you settle on 8, Caleb?
You know, I just took Dave Ramsey and I took Dalbar. So Dave Ramsey says you can earn 12. Dalbar says the average investor earns 4. We'll just meet in the middle, Dave.
So what would you feel a portfolio of stocks, no bonds, no anything, over time?
I think if you're not going to touch it, the data says that you'll get over 10%.
All right. So you want to put 10 for... I'm doing the stock portion of their non-qualified account or their brokerage account.
I struggle with that as I know that we're not giving financial planning advice, but yeah, let's do 10.
Let's do 10.
I struggle with that because the average investor doesn't make that, but
got it.
People watching this probably are better than the average.
And how about a bond fund or bonds? What would you suspect?
This is where you're the expert. What are bonds right now over time? Like not this year with high interest rates, but like over time, what are they averaging?
So I would put bond returns probably around 4%.
Okay, let's
right?
do that.
Now, you might have noticed that
yeah.
you know 2022 was a rough year in the bond market. U.S. Treasuries, like the TLT, like that was a ETF that was down a significant amount, right? But we're just going to put about 3 or 4%. Do you think that's fair?
I think that because we're looking over 30 years. We're not looking at today.
Right.
So yes, I do. I think that's fair.
Great, great. All right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look at over time, this couple saving this money, right? So they're saving $7,000 a year.
$7,000
a year. Roth IRAs, right? They're max funding their 401k at $23,000, right? They're putting $30,000.
Make sure it's talking to the microphone.
They're putting $30,000 into the stock portion of their portfolio.
Yep.
And the other portion of their portfolio, of course, of their non-qualified account is their bond portion, right? So that's about $20,000. So they're investing into an investment account around $50,000 a year.
Okay, so hold on. They're putting, I'm seeing $50,000 for, they're saving a lot more than $50,000, right? They're saving $87,000.
Right.
Okay.
In just their brokerage account, they're saving $50,000.
Okay. So yeah, this family's crushing it.
Yeah, this family is like, you know, my business partners and I, we try to get people to save at least 20, 25% of their income.
Wow. Good for you guys. That's amazing.
So typically this person maybe is already moved into their home. They're not saving for, you know, their first property anymore, so on and so forth. All right. Now we can change these numbers if you want to make them less.
No, I think it's good. I think the scenario is going to be the same. Yeah.
So what we're going to do, right, is in the alternative scenario, you can see this alternative assets right down here, right? All we're going to do is we're going to remove the $20,000 in bonds and we're going to buy two life insurance policies for a $10,000 premium each.
Okay. That's fair.
Right. Now I built these policies, right?
Yep.
In the system, right? And I built them for max funding, max overfunding, $10,000. Not a huge amount. So one of the things that I think is a misconception, Caleb, is when people think about life insurance, sometimes our industry hasn't did us any favors. They're like, well, life insurance piece is the end all be all. Like, you know, people are out there saying, don't invest in stocks. Don't invest in this. Don't invest in your 401k. Do everything in life insurance. And what we're trying to show people is that you don't have to give up one to have the other.
Yep.
Right. So the other thing I want to point out about this is like, why is this couple investing in any type of fixed income at all? Bonds, right? Because they're not 100% aggressive in their portfolio 100% of the time. And likely nobody is.
Yep.
Most Americans over time have been a 60, 40, 70, 30 investor, right?
Yeah.
So folks, what that means is if you were investing $100,000, right? Like 60,000 approximately would go into the, you know, the risky portion of your portfolio, the equity portion, and the other, you know, 40% would go into some type of fixed income, right? So all we're doing in this scenario is we're just carving out the bonds.
Right.
And we're buying two.
And the other thing in this scenario is, I'll just say, is you're not quote unquote using your policy for anything. It's essentially a dead asset till retirement, correct?
Yep. It's an asset on your balance sheet,
which is awesome. There's other things that you could potentially do with that asset throughout your life. We're not even going to look at that. It's again not insurance advice, investment advice, legal advice. The point that I'm making is, I'm imagining that we're going to start seeing this in multidimensional aspect, but we're assuming that this asset's not actually giving you anything the next 20, 30 years.
Right.
So,
right.
Cool.
The thing it is giving you though, Caleb, is flexibility and death benefit, right?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So in the event that something horrible happens, it's going to be there for you. So here's the thing about that. I didn't build into this. I could have built in the cost of a term insurance policy.
Yeah.
Right. And that's going to be, you know, a debt on the cash flow that maybe doesn't provide any value other than the security for a certain duration, right? But we're not even going to build that. I could build that into here, but so what we're going to do now is we're going to jump over to our simulation, right? So again, we have path A and path B, right? So anytime on the screen, if you're watching this video, you see current scenario. I just want you to imagine that means kind of a traditional financial plan, conventional wisdom, stocks and bonds, right?
Yep.
Average investor, right? Alternative plan, we're just using insurance as an alternative asset class, all right? So we're going to go to summary here. And we're going to go to distribution. So now we've retired these people. Remember, they started when they were 40.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And the first thing that you might ask yourself, let me put this into present mode really quick here. I apologize for that. Come on. All right. So we're just going to say that when do most people want to retire? Around 65, you know, some people a little earlier, some people a little later, but we're just using conventional retirement age. So the first question you may ask yourself is like, all right, so now it's obviously shown these people are retired. They've saved this money over the last 25 years. They're now retired. They're taking money.
Yep. Distribution planning.
Distribution planning, right? Now, by the way, I want to focus on one thing here is that most financial advisors don't talk about distribution planning.
It's so shocking to me because you can't spend a rate of return. That's the thing that everyone wants to talk about. But the reason you're putting money aside to begin with is for a future cash flow.
Exactly.
Most people aren't addressing that. And I think it's a shame.
And unfortunately, that's the place where people need the most help.
Correct.
And in fact, with our clients, we take them through a simulation like this, right? Because we want to understand how they feel about the distribution strategy before they start the wealth accumulation
which is the right way to do it,
right? And
think with the end in mind.
Yeah, and to be frank, like our industry doesn't necessarily do that because this is the place where a lot of financial advisors start, their assets start falling off their books, right?
Yep.
They start losing money on some of their clients, and it's more time consuming to do wealth distribution planning. So
you're telling me I need to take time and I lose assets under management.
Right, so, right, exactly. So you might be curious how I got these numbers, how the system got this, let's say, 36,000 in income off the 401k and the, you know, the 14,000. So as you might imagine, the calculator, I told it to solve for a certain distribution rate, right? So what is commonly the way that people
distribute their money? 4%.
4% rule, right?
Yeah.
And so we see that as a sliding scale, right? Somewhere between 3 and 5, you know, Dr. Wade Fowles, you know, showed that number to be a little different than like the conventional wisdom of the 4% rule, right? But here we're just assuming that this person's going to start the retirement plan with the hope of ending their life with the legacy that they started retirement with and passing that legacy on, right? So what I'm using here is just a 3% kind of live off the interest, you know, plan, if you will.
Now,
distribution strategy.
Someone could say that's on the low end, but 3% technically is... I mean, what do you think? Do you think 3% is a fair number?
I've seen this number move a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to use about 3. I'd rather err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
Right? Now, here's the thing, right? The one thing you're going to love about this is like, we'll go in and we'll change the distribution here in a bit, right?
Cool.
We're gonna write on the screen a little bit here, Caleb. So tell me the reasons that people use the safe withdrawal rate.
What? I mean, because they don't want to run out of money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably one of the biggest.
Run out of money, right? So what are all the things that make these people worried about running out of money?
Their taxes, volatility mainly. Volatility.
Market risk, yep.
Or sequence volatility. Risk loss.
Sequence, yep.
And increase costs, taxes and all.
Yep, so inflation.
Inflation.
Right? So all these things increase what I would call longevity risk.
Yep.
Running out of, you know, money before you run out of life.
Yep.
Right. The other thing, like this is a married couple, right? So what happens if this couple's maybe spending, you know, 6% of their assets or 7% of their assets, right? Like their spouse then, right, maybe has a potential issue or a potential opportunity to outlive the other spouse, right? So let's say we had some market turbulence, right? So let's say that, you know, we're pulling out 6% and the market's been down over time, right? And then heaven forbid, you know, one of the couple passes away, right? And they're sitting there on their, you know, close to dying and, you know, their loved ones around them. And they're worried that they've spent too much money early in their retirement, right? Because what happens early in your retirement definitely affects how well you live the rest of your life.
That's right.
So again, we have longevity risk, right? What are the reasons people spend only 3%? Well, share one with you, like financial advisors don't want you to spend your money necessarily, right?
Well, and you, like you said, if you want to pass on money to the next generation, if you want to pass on quote unquote your legacy, you don't want to spend down your assets at all. I do think the idea of spending down your assets does feel icky to some people. I don't think it necessarily should be, but that for people that want to give a legacy, you feel like you're getting behind when you took your entire life to build this thing and now you're taking it away.
Absolutely.
Seems, you know, problematic.
Well, and another reason people don't feel like they can spend their money when they get to retirement, are you familiar with provisional income for Social Security? How much of your how much of your Social Security is going to be taxed. Yeah, right?
Isn't it crazy that they can tax it, period?
Yeah, up to 85% of your Social Security income can be taxed again, right?
Yeah.
How high is your Medicare premiums going to be?
Yeah.
People are worried about how much they're going to pay for their Medicare premiums.
Yeah.
Right? So the more income you have, right, the more you spend, the more risk you have, longevity risk, the more legacy risk to your legacy, and furthermore, the more you might be taxed, right? And by the way, again, we don't get to choose what tax bracket we might be in the future, right? Yep. We don't get to choose what inflation is, right? Yep. We don't get to choose what market volatility is, whether it's stocks or bonds or whatever it may be, right? So I think there's a problem with that plan.
Right. And it's interesting, the David McKnight, author of Power of Zero, makes a good point. If you are not in the 0% tax bracket, there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of unknowns that comes with that. And so he makes the argument, not that this is possible, but that you should try to be in the 0% tax bracket for those reasons.
Right. Absolutely. And so these folks obviously are not in a 0% tax bracket, but what they can spend per year is after tax is about $142,000.
Yeah.
Right? So they save a lot of money over time.
Now, is the reason for some of this, like the 401k, is the reason that it's only $36,000, is it because we're taking taxes
this,
out of that?
This is calculating for tax.
So this is the $142,000 is net.
Yep.
Okay. So that, because I look at that, I'm like, how is only $1.6 million? That's a lot of money. Why is it only producing $36,000?
Right.
But we're assuming that, again, and we're assuming a 25% tax bracket.
Right.
I'm not going so full-time, like, communists, like we're like 50% plus taxes, like it could get a lot worse. And part of me wants to change up the numbers on you to see, but let's keep going on this because it's interesting.
And again, remember the other thing that we're assuming in this scenario is this: these people have a legacy objective, right? Like they don't have life insurance to pass on, right, per se, right?
Okay. Or maybe so that's why we're only doing 3%,
right? That's and again, I can show 4, right? And we can show 5, right?
Okay.
And we'll tag back into that. But what we're going to look at now is simply, everything else is the same.
Yep.
3% distribution. The only thing we don't have is we don't have this. Now, I want you to imagine that these are one account, right? This is the stock portion, as it says there, and this is the bond portion, right? So all we're taking away is that investment in bonds, right?
Yep.
Again, not an investment. Yep. You know, not investment.
You're replacing that with life insurance.
I'm just replacing that with life insurance. So what we're going to do here is we're just going to remove this. Just going to go right on here. And what we're going to see here is, of course, these numbers are all the same, except we have no money coming out of the bonds.
Yep.
So what we're going to do now is we're just going to switch over to the alternative plan. So just to reinforce for our listeners, you know, all we're doing here is we're contributing to two whole life insurance policies as a replacement for the bond portion in the original plan. So we're going to go over to the alternative strategy here, or the alternative distribution plan. And what we can see here is, of course, you know, we're no longer putting money into that bond plan over our lifetime, right? So obviously we're not pulling any money out of that. So we have two policies here that we contributed $10,000 a year to over our lifetime. We stopped funding these policies at age 64, right? And now we're pulling money out, right?
Okay.
So as you can see, everything else here is the same numbers as it was on the other screen. We were just pulling out 3%. And now look what we got here, $71,000, right? $171,000. Wow. So went from $142,000 to $171,000. So what was that difference? Made that difference?
Yeah, I mean, the good question. Can we go back to the bonds? How much was the bond we had? Okay, so we had $761,000 in bonds, only producing $16,000. That's
right.
One of
it's because we were pulling out 3%, right?
Which so is, okay.
let's go into be fair and let's.
But let's go back. Let's go back. So I just want to see. Okay, so that's 700. So technically, the cash value is, so the internal rate of return on this is higher. So the life insurance is actually earning more than the bonds
over time.
So maybe something playing devil's advocate, maybe the bonds does better than 4%. But the other reason, another thing here is this has a death benefit, whereas the other quote unquote scenario didn't have any death benefit. So you have $1.6 million of actual income tax-free death benefit as well. But I would just assume that the life insurance gives you the ability to have a higher distribution.
Right. Furthermore, what else does the life insurance allow us to do? Not have tax drag.
Yeah, that's right. It's
right.
Isn't it considered tax exempt cash flow?
Exactly. Furthermore, every year that the yield on your bonds, right?
Yeah.
Where you know how your tax on yield, right? Like your tax at whatever your margin bracket is, yeah. right? So or your effective tax
really
rate, right?
Point.
So
yeah.
so we actually recaptured, and that I'm not calculating for that, right? I can I can add another bucket, and I can recapture the taxes that you may have paid, right, yeah. on that yield, and show that. But I don't even have to show that, and still.
Are you technically in this scenario? You just using the life insurance policy and spending it down. You're not using what some people call a volatility buffer or other things.
This is just spending down the asset.
Interesting. Because yep. you yep. could make the argument, many do, saying, what if we didn't touch the life insurance, but we were able to take out 6% from our investments?
Exactly. So that's the next thing, right?
Okay, sorry. So we're not scripted. No, I'm just like, perfect. My mind's
that's,
going.
That's perfect, right? Yeah. Because what is it? It's a big fat permission slip.
Yeah, that's right. right.
So again, let's go back to our risk, right? Like, yep. what are we worried about, right? We're worried about market risk, yep. right? We're worried about longevity, yep. right? We're worried about legacy,
yep.
right? And that's and we're worried about inflation, we're worried about higher taxes, right? Yep. So what have we done here? We've effectively lowered taxes a little yep. bit, right?
Yeah, I think depending you beat me for having the world's worst handwriting, by the way.
Yeah, yes, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
So, and furthermore, we also, I feel like bonds go up and down
yeah.
with market volatility,
yeah,
right?
I think it's a fallacy to say that bonds are not correlated to the market.
Right.
The stock market, they're absolutely correlated. They probably just have less volatility.
Yeah. So to go back to our original point, all we're doing is trying to take a more conservative asset class and replace it with maybe a slightly more conservative asset and with more guarantees.
Yeah.
Right. And more potential tax efficiency. Now,
yeah. And more legacy.
And more legacy. Yeah. Right. So let's go in now and let's say, well, here's the thing. We were saying 3%. We were spending 3% of our assets, right?
Yeah.
Or living off 3% interest, if you will. So tell me a little bit about, you know, would you feel in that scenario that I painted earlier where the market's going down, right? And maybe you've been spending 3%, but, you know, maybe your advisor said, hey, you can start spending 6%, right? And you're in that situation where you're faced with death,
yep.
right? And you're thinking, wow, did I and my spouse spend too much money? Is my spouse, is her or his yep. legacy going to be 20 years into the yep. future, right? Like, again, that's the whole reason people don't spend that much. But yep. if you knew you had a death benefit,
yep.
right?
So let's say, in this case, $1.6 million and counting.
Right. So if you look at this, right, like let's say that this account, let's the markets have been volatile and you've been spending a little bit too much of that account or the 401k or the Roth yep. or whatever. Like, the beauty of life insurance isn't just about the cash flow, right, that you can take out of the policy. It's what is it at the end of the day? It's death benefit,
yeah,
right? So one of the spouses passes away. What happens to this death benefit? Whoa, it goes over here and it just fills up this yeah. bucket, right? Yeah. So in that scenario, wouldn't you feel more comfortable yeah. to spend a greater percentage than maybe 4%?
Yeah, and that's one right? of the whole concept of this concept of volatility buffer is you're able to spend down other assets because you not just have a permission slip to spend, but you also, if the market goes down, you can utilize that asset class and let it recover.
Right.
So you not only do you have the permission to spend, you feel less bad about spending it down. But the other thing is, like, you can potentially let your other accounts recover and it be just more efficient regardless.
Right.
And someone playing devil's advocate could say you should probably have more life insurance cash value if you really want to be a volatility buffer, because this is, what is this, 4 or 5 years of potential income replacement? That's good, but you could, the more years that you could get eliminate from downfall, like, could be beneficial.
Absolutely. So what I want to do is I want to go in and test this, right?
Yep.
So let's go in and stress test it. So let's think about first about the folks out there who maybe subscribe to maybe a different training of thought about returns over time,
yep.
right? So there are some folks out there who maybe, you know, speculate that people should get 12% over time
yep.
in their investments. So let's do this. Let's change the investment, and let's go back here and let's just make these investments, right? Let's just say that we got 12%. Now, you and I both know that maybe isn't you know,
that might be aggressive every single year.
That might be aggressive, right? But let's just say in their 401k and their stock plan that they got 12%, right? How does that change the scenario? How do you feel that it's not going to, right? Because
the only thing that would really change is if we change the bond distribution or rate of return, because right now the only thing that life insurance is quote unquote competing with is your bond portfolio.
Right. Right. That's the thing. Like, some people think that I have to give up my risk-based potential higher return asset to invest it, you know, in other asset classes or contribute to a life insurance policy. Right. So let's change the bonds then. Right.
And let me just play devil's advocate as you're speaking. Is there anything the bond does that life insurance doesn't? I'm just genuinely, like, is there any upside to having a bond versus whole life insurance policy in your portfolio?
I don't believe so.
Maybe in the first 1 to 3 years, you potentially could cash out that bond and have more. But possibly. How bonds are structured is like you with coupons and all. I don't even know if that's even valid. But you could make the argument, depending on a bond fund, that you could potentially have a little bit more liquidity in the first couple of years.
Right.
That's about it.
So let's think about, folks, you know, this was big in the 80s. You're too young for that. But like junk bonds were, you know, like, let's say that we invested in junk bonds. Yep. Right. Like, and I think that you might agree that they're called junk for a reason. Yeah, but like you're taking
you're taking on a
bit of risk. Right. So let's say that you were getting, you know, 8% in your junk bond portfolio.
Not investment advice.
Right?
Clearly.
Definitely not investment
advice.
You're
getting 8% in your bonds. Be careful.
Right. And exactly. So let's just add that in. Right. Let's take these investments. Let's take them back down to the, you know, the original 8% that you'd provided.
Yep.
I think this one was actually 10. So we'll just move that down and we'll just close that one. And then we'll move the 401k back to 8%. And let's just solve for that again and see what that does for us. Right. So now you're invested in maybe very aggressive bonds, right? So here we have a scenario where we're creating $156,000 in income now, right? So,
and we're assuming for the next 25 years that the bond's earning 8%.
8%.
But you're taking 3% distribution out.
Yep.
And after taxes, you only get $30,000.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And how much more risk did we take on?
A heck of a lot more.
We're basically
you're eliminating this whole concept of safe money,
right?
Or diversified,
right? So we traded a potentially promise based asset in life insurance for a market risk asset. Right?
But you're saying if we go back to the life insurance, like the life insurance creates more cash flow.
The life insurance, $171,000.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the problem then, Caleb, must be in our distribution strategy.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. So let's change the distributions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, and to be fair, let's change it to 4%. I think right now, anyone that actually looks at the data, it wouldn't be saying for your equities that you should be taking out more than 4% unless you have some type of other distribution strategy with buckets and all. But I think unless you use life insurance or annuities or some type of buffer asset, 4% really is the number that should be used.
So should we say, right, in scenario one that we're pulling out 4%, the safe withdrawal rate?
Yeah.
In scenario two, where we have the buffered asset, that we're willing to pull out 1% more? Or do you want me to make
six.
Them?
Let's go. Let's
you
go,
six.
Go six.
All right.
I just, and again, not investment advice. I just think, like, again, if my question, I don't know if we can do this, is if you could not pull out the money from the life insurance,
but
pull out
that.
Six. So what we're doing, just for those that you at home, we're pulling out 6% in equities, not pulling out anything on the life insurance. Yes, your life insurance cash value and death benefit are going to continue to go up, but we're assuming that if and when the markets do underperform, that we're tapping into the life insurance. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So with that logic, let's go with 6 versus 4, and I'm actually genuinely curious what this is going to produce.
Yeah, give me one moment here. I just got to do a couple more little adjustments.
And by the way, if you like these type of videos, please let us know. If you have any questions, we're going to have Justin. We have your business partner, Pat, in the studio as well. We're going to be creating some videos. Lots of fun and exciting things to come. But we've heard from you, and we're going to create more videos that you guys want us to make. So if you have questions, please let us know. And again, I'm so grateful that you're here.
We're going to turn off the life insurance distributions, correct?
Yep.
All right. Let's see here.
Drum roll. I'm excited.
All right. So.
Okay. So let's go to the first.
All right. We're pulling out 4%.
4%.
So we're created $206,000 net.
And that's after taxes. That's an amazing job.
That's an amazing job. That's a solid financial plan, right? Like the markets did well for them over time. Yeah.
We're also assuming never lost money in the market.
Right.
We're like, this is awesome. But like, yeah, for what we're talking about, yes.
Yeah. We're not showing like, you know, the first years in, you know, retirement that the, you know, sequence of returns harmed their greater, overall assets. Right. But let's look at alternative, right? We have $245,000,
yes,
without pulling out anything from the life insurance because we have the buffered asset.
Yep. I love that.
Right.
And we're not able to show that. So what this is not showing is you have $600,000 of cash value with $1.6 million of death benefit increasing.
Correct.
So this is your net worth and estate values far greater. But we're not even talking about that now. We're just saying because you have that buffer asset, you're able to be more aggressive with that
distribution strategy.
With that permission to spend, that's $45,000 more.
Yep.
I hope we can edit this video in such a way that can get across, because I know that this has been a long video, but I think if someone understands that, this is showing them something that we've been verbally saying for a while, but it clearly lays out the optionality that you have when you structure permanent life insurance in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a lot of moving parts here, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to go through this calculator with their numbers, we'd be happy to make it available and, to your team. But this is really powerful. And so again, the take home is it's not if this then that, right? Like you can replace one small section of your portfolio, right? And make a huge difference.
Yep.
Right. By the way, do you think this gets sweeter if the taxes are higher in the future?
Let's do that. Let's just go just because we're
nerding out a little bit, right?
This is what I love.
Do you want to make?
Let's go future taxes 35%. Just for you at home, you might not be, but this couple clearly is making good money, and there's a great chance in the future that taxes have to be higher.
You want to make capital gains a little higher?
Let's make capital gains 20% and let's make income tax 35%. You know, if they're in California, that still might be super generous, but who knows what's going to happen in the next 25 years.
All right, let's summarize it. So current, we're at $183,000. Versus?
Now, this is going to look worse because of taxes, but it still is going to beat. Let's...
So if you wanted to buffer your taxes, what would you do?
You might
take utilize distributions,
from a life insurance policy. Let's go and let's make this 4%. And then let's take from the life insurance just to prove out your point.
All right.
So 219 is what we need to beat.
So we're going to take from the life insurance.
And then we're going to change the distribution to 4%.
Change distribution. Give me one moment. We're just going to blast through this here real quick.
I like this. I like this little...
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of clicks, but
a lot of clicks, but what I love is this is not some presentation like we're in real life. And again, you're only as good as your inputs.
Right.
So you're only, and that's the thing is like this is so flawed. This is literally just laying out a theory, but this, I probably shouldn't say guarantee. That's a dirty word in our space, but like, it's not going to turn out this way. It could be better, could be a lot worse. But the whole idea is we're trying our best to play apples to apples because we're trying to give the other side as fair as a comparison. The only thing that we're not doing is taking a 6% distribution rate with no buffer asset because that would just be irresponsible.
Right.
But you could technically have put your money in cash and do buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make the argument that life insurance is just a better asset than cash long term.
Right.
Because of what it gives you.
All right. I think we're set here. So let's go up to summary here.
Okay.
183,000, same number. And oops, don't know how that happened. and we have 195,000.
Still beats it.
Yep.
Still beats it. So what is, as we land this plane, what's your conclusion? You've worked with people, you have a ton of designations. You're not trying to say one thing is good or bad. I think what I really respect about you is you try to take a less extreme approach. But through this, like when you work with people, like what are some of the outcomes or what are some of the conversations that come from this?
First conversation is like once people realize all the risk in retirement, they want to eliminate them, right? People often don't realize that they have an additional opportunity, you know, better their situation from a longevity standpoint, from a legacy standpoint. They don't realize that there's market risk in retirement because all they've ever heard is you wrap up your money in a special little wrapper and you live off the interest, right?
Or they don't even, no one's ever talked to them about what the exit plan is.
Right. Well, and furthermore, there another piece that we didn't show is we didn't take the 401k. We could have taken the 401k. And because we had the death benefit, we could have just said, well, we're just going to spend down the 401k.
Yeah.
In the scenario with life insurance, guess where the income would have went? Way up. Taxes would have went up too if they went to pre-tax, pre-tax 401k, right?
Yeah.
But that's another scenario where having that buffered asset allows people to spend more money, live the best life for the rest of their life, right? Because people get to that place in retirement and they're scared.
Yeah.
But they don't know it when they start saving that 40, right?
I agree.
You can't build this plan the same way when you're 55, 10 years out from retirement, as you can when you're 40 or 35.
Yeah, and even if you are 55, there's options, but you're saying that there's more options the younger that you are. Obviously, it's across the board. Like compounding, this thing that we call the eighth wonder of the world, gives you advantages across the board the earlier you can start because you just get it. Your options compound as well. So right. I think there's something there. One of my biggest takeaways is there was a scenario that we showed when we pumped up the bonds to 8% that your net worth was far greater on scenario one.
Yes.
But a smaller net worth produced more.
Right.
That's another thing that I think is we live in a world where like people just want big numbers. Like big numbers is better than smaller numbers. Not all numbers are created equal. And I think that's something I've known for a while. And it's something I've heard multiple different ways. And I think anytime we can see that different math, different inputs, it's always powerful.
Right. I always ask people, would they rather, you know, bundle up all their statements, right, and see their big number, right, on a paper document, right, or have a higher cash flow, right? And so, Caleb, I appreciate you taking the time to let me share this. You know, there's a lot of different scenarios here. This is an imperfect calculator. There's some linear returns that it shows here, right?
Yep, totally. And if for anything, it gives them the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
Justin, thank you. And I'm also very excited for us to come. If you're not subscribed to our channel, my hope is that we're providing enough value for you to take the time to subscribe. And just know when you comment, don't comment out of pity, but if there's something that was like an epiphany or a question that you have, please write that down because other people might benefit from that. And we are on a movement to make intentional living like the new wealth metric. You're going to hear a lot more about that, but we just want to make education like this just more accessible. And the higher our channel continues to grow, it allows people like you to come fly in. We're just so grateful for that. And I'm excited for what's to come. So Justin, thank you. And check out some of the links below for more information about how you can learn more about what we're all up to. Thank you so much for listening to the Better Wealth Podcast. It would mean the world to me if you could hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with the people that you know and love.